Hey everybody, this is Lee Aaron and you're watching CMS TV.
Perfect. Aiken Presents, and I, of course, am Chris Aiken, and today on the show, we welcome back to the show a legend in hard rock, legend, the metal queen herself, Miss Lee Aaron. Lee, how are you?
Good. Good to be here, Chris.
Absolutely. Well, it's great to have you back. It's great to have this new release, Tattoo Me, comes out on April the 26th, and let's talk about it. For people that don't know, it is a covers record, songs that I understand have meaning to you or have some sort of reflection of your rock personality to you. So talk a little bit about A, deciding to do a covers record, and B, how you made the choices of the songs.
So yeah, well, the way it came about, you know, I've worked with the same group of musicians now for the last, I don't know, my husband's been in the band 23 years. I've been working with Dave Reimer, my bass player, for about 18 years. And Sean Kelly has been in the band almost 11 years now. Wow. And, you know, we just have a really unique chemistry together. I love working with these guys. I think they're some of the very, very best players in this country and wonderful people. And we've made quite a few original albums since 2016. Mm-hmm. I blazed back onto the scene. And I guess we're always just sort of looking for a new challenge. So we'd done three original albums, you know, fully original songs that we'd written. We'd done a Christmas record, and we also did a live album. And last year when we were on the Monsters of Rock cruise, we were sitting around having dinner one night, and we were like, okay, what's going to be our next project? And I don't even remember who, maybe it was Sean or somebody floated the idea of, what about a really cool covers record where we go back and either revisit material that was really influential to us or just songs that were meaningful to us in some way. And so we agreed a covers record would be a fun thing. But when it actually came down to the task of selecting the tunes for the album, it was hard because, number one, we didn't stop being fans at 18 years old. We sure. Love music. We continue to love music. And so that's why you're seeing material on the album everywhere from the 60s right into the 2000s, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, there were a few artists, of course, that I felt I absolutely had to do a cover of. And that would, you know, Anna Nancy Wilson from Heart. I was sure. Like, I got to do a Heart cover. Got to do a Fleetwood Mac cover. Because, you know, when I was a young girl in the late 70s, these were the bands that were, and the artists that were really influential. They were responsible for me becoming a girl rocker. There weren't many of us back then, and there weren't many women to really role model after. And I just loved Anna and Nancy Wilson from Heart. You know, they were these amazing women who wrote their own songs, played their instruments, didn't trade on their sexuality back in the 70s. And they were just true musicians, pure musicians. And I'm like, I want to be like that. And So, you know, that's sort of how those songs came about. Of course, I was a huge Elton John fan when I was, again, a young girl. My father, who used to work at a college, showed up one day. The college radio station just decided to make this transition from vinyl to 8-track. Like, that was a good idea.
Right.
Short-lived format of 8-track. And they were getting rid of all their vinyl, and he showed up and he had all this vinyl. And so in that pile of vinyl, he was walking down the hallway, and they just said, like, we're just getting rid of all this. He said, my daughter loves music. Can I take some of this home? And so I found, of course, a whole bunch of music in that pile. But in, you know, the album probably that was the most impactful was Elton John's Goodbye Yellow Brick Road. And I can't tell you how many hours and days and weeks I spent just laying on my rec room floor with a pair of headphones on, listening, absorbing that album. And
right.
So I always, from the time I was like 15 onward, wanted to cover Someone Saved My Life Tonight.
Elton Very John. Cool.
Yeah. And then, continue. Sorry.
No, I want to unpack a little bit of what you said there. I want to start with the Fleetwood Mac song, because it's interesting to me. And you mentioned it, you know, that one of the bands that made you confident, I guess, to being a female rocker at a time when there really weren't many of them. Yet you covered one of the songs that's not led by one of the two female leads, you know, that you covered Go Your Own Way, which is obviously a Lindsay tune. What made you choose that one versus, I don't know, Songbird or Rihanna or something like that?
Well, what we found when we were going through some of the material was that some songs had kind of been done to death.
Okay.
You know, to do Dreams or some of the other songs, it felt as though, you know, or even like, say, Barracuda Heart, like, I mean, that felt like an obvious choice. I've said many times, the opening riff for Metal Queen is the Barracuda riff, you know, like,
right.
steal from the best, right? And, but, you know, you go to YouTube and there's, you know, 100 girls singing some of these songs.
Sure.
And so we were trying to make something, we were trying to choose something that was a little less off the beaten path. And, you know, make no mistake, you know, Christine McVie and Stevie Nicks' voices are all over that tune.
Sure.
But, you know, I like the meaning of Go Your Own Way, because okay. I've kind of gone my own way, you know, made some unconventional choices and done my own path. So I don't know, we just landed on that tune. And
right on. Excellent. And then, you know, we're talking about Heart too. I love the choice. Even It Up is one of those that I would imagine 99% of the people think it's your own tune, because they just don't know that song. And it's a really great choice. And it really, in the early days when it was originally recorded, it certainly features the unbelievable voice of Ann. For you to tackle that voice, which I'll say is the greatest female voice of all time, you know, was that intimidating in any way to take on, you know, the top of the top of the top vocal like that?
Well, a little, you know, she's, you know, has been and still is one of my all-time favorite singers.
Sure.
The fact that she's in her early 70s now and she's still singing as amazing as she is so inspirational for me. But I got to tell you, like, that Baby LaStrange album, it's not their most popular album, but it hit at a time. It was 1980 and I was 17 years old.
Okay.
And it just came at a time where I just, you know, I'd been in my first rock band for a couple of years. And, you know, I remember looking at that cover. It was their first album that they did after they broke away from the Fisher Brothers. And I remember just staring at that album cover over and over and going, I want to be that, you know, like, and the fact that, again, like, they were being independent women, they were writing their own material. And I know a lot of people didn't think of it at the time, But revisiting that tune and that album, again, we were trying to find a cover that wasn't done to death. I mean, Dolly Parton did a covers record and she did Magic Man. Magic Man would have been a great choice. And in fact, when we first started talking about doing this record, I was floating the idea to the guys. I said, what if we did Magic Man? But it kind of did it like industrial, like Nine Inch Nails. And I thought that would have been a really interesting approach.
Sure.
And then Dolly Parton announced that she was covering it. And I was like, damn, I guess I can't do that one. And, but the reason I landed on Even It Up, again, were all the same reasons, their first independent record away from the Fisher Brothers. And I felt like Even It Up was a really, even though people, I guess, at the time when that album hit and it came out, were not viewing it that way. It's a real song about the equality of the sexes. And that's just a theme that really, of course, resonates with me. Sure. I've written so much female empowerment kind of material over the course of my career. And and the exciting thing is we just finished shooting footage for a new video, which will be dropping on the 5th of April.
Okay.
And I'm wearing boxing gloves and it's going to be really cool. So I'm kind of excited.
Very cool. You know, since you mentioned the female empowerment in music, what do you think when you look out today? There's so much more of it, obviously, than when you came up. There was you and Doro in the metal world, and then that was kind of it, you know. But now when you look out, you see The Warning or Plush or Ginger, or you know, it's normal. I would say very much normal now. It's not, nobody looks up and is like, oh, female fronted band anymore. Is that a good thing? Is that the way it should have always been? What do you think?
Oh, 100%. I mean, it's the nice thing is it's become pretty normalized now for a woman to be in a hard rock band and not be treated like there's some type of novelty. Because honestly, when Doro and I started, we kind of got treated as though we were, again, like a novelty act. We had to scrape and fight and climb up that mountain for every shred of credibility and respect that we got. And it was really, really hard. And in fact, you know, I hate to say this about my own country because I'm so proud to be a Canadian and I love Canada, but especially here where just the whole landscape of media culture and the television waves were just so very much oriented either toward folk rock or disco-y punk pop women, or the homegrown talents like Anne Murray, who's fabulous, but that's who was around, you know, time when I kind of hit. And so, you know, the media especially kind of treated me like I was sort of a little bit of a throwaway joke at the beginning. And it was very, very hard for me to get press. It was very hard for me to get radio play here. The media that I did get, again, it was, you had to do something kind of, you know, outrageous. So I, you know, I went to England and played Reading Festival and they were like, oh, she's going overseas. And I felt very much as though I was taken a lot more seriously in Europe. I was a rock artist who happened to be a woman, not a woman who was playing hard rock.
Right.
Was, yeah. But again, in hindsight, much of this kind of stuff comes full circle. And I don't know if you're aware, again, it was such an honor, but this past year I was honored with a star on Canada's Walk of Fame. And I was part of a group of, I believe, 13 Canadian rock artists, including April Wine, Max Webster, Loverboy, who were part of a special 25th anniversary induction. What they wanted to do, they called it Canada's Rock of Fame. They wanted to go back and honor some Canadian rock artists that had been extremely influential and pioneers in their field for those to come, who had really not been given the respect and credibility they deserved. And I was one of three women, myself, a band called Parachute Club, who represent the LGBT community very strongly, and they did in the late 70s, early 80s in Canada, and Carol Pope. I don't know if you know who Carol Pope is.
I don't know Carol Pope.
Oh, she's amazing. She's amazing. Yeah.
Very good. It's interesting too. Now, Lee, you know, you've come back, you know, since I guess what, 2015 or so, and you've been as active as you've ever been. You know, I mean, if you look at the output's the same as the initial output, really, as far as every 18 months, 2 years, we get a record. You're playing shows. Is that what it was intended to be when you decided to come back, or did it kind of grow from, oh, I want to go back and make music, to, okay, now I'm a full-time musician again?
Well, yeah, that's an interesting question. You know, I don't like to say a hiatus, but I took a little bit of a hiatus to become a mother. My husband and I have two children. They're 18 and 19 now. We had them pretty close together. But, you know, I don't think I ever really thought I was going to stop. But after our daughter was born and she screamed all the way in her car seat up to the grocery store, the idea of actually just packing her up and taking her on the road seemed impossible. Right. I know that we went on a trip when she was about one to Jamaica, like just a family trip, and we chose this resort because it had a vacation nanny, and this child did not sleep at all on the airplane. It was just, and I went, how did I ever think I was just going to pack this baby up and go back on the road? So I was kind of forced to take a little bit of a hiatus for about a decade. And, you know, it was really healthy and really good for me anyway, because it, you know, I got to put a lot of my creative energy into raising kids, my kids, and, they're not going to be messed up and in therapy when they're 30 because mom was never around.
Right.
Nanny. But, you know, I always knew when they were old enough, I would come back and make another record or another rock record. Okay. And so when they were old enough, I did. And then it's just, I'm just working with a great team of people. I love my band. And the beautiful thing about now, back in the day when I would pump out record after record after record, it was kind of because I was under contract. I was a record company girl, like so many of us were back then. And there was this like, kind of like a treadmill that you were on. It was like, you know, you write songs, you record an album, you go out on tour, you come off the road, you write songs, you record an album, you tour. And it was like this 18-month cycle that you were on again and again and again. Now I'm doing it on my own terms.
Sure.
Doing it because I'm producing all my own records. I'm recording a lot of it in my home studio. I've gone into big studios, of course, with some big engineers like Mike Fraser and John Webster and a few people like that lately. But it's purely because I'm just being creative. I don't know.
Right.
and it's fun. And, you know, in a weird way, I don't know, you've probably experienced this. It feels like every time you go on social media or the news, you're hearing about another rock star who passed away.
Yeah.
And it's kind of sad. Like, I mean, obviously some of them are older than I am, but occasionally they're not, like a Chris Cornell. Right. Or mm-hmm. So, it kind of hits hard at this age. And so in a weird kind of way, I kind of feel like so much more to do. I'm still feeling so inspired. I still love music. I'm still a fangirl. I'm still listening to new things and discovering new things I love. And I'm just so inspired to keep creating. And I feel like who knows how much time any of us have to keep things we want to do. And it's a real joyful experience for me. So as long as it's fun, I'm going to keep doing it.
Sure. You know? All right. I'm going to ask you a question that absolutely has no right answer. And I know you're going to tell me the answer is both, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Which side is more fulfilling to you of your career, the initial side or this side?
I have to say this, the back half right now.
Okay.
You know, again, all due respect for all of the producers and people I've worked with in the past, the record label guys, but it was a completely different industry.
Sure.
The beginning, the initial stages of my career through the 80s and into the 90s, there was still a lot of money to be made from physical record sales and radio play. And I mean, you should see my Spotify checks. They're gigantic. Yes.
Nice.
I mean, anyone will tell you that, but, you know, so the industry was largely obviously propelled by money. And, so there were all these corporate suits behind the scenes, and, quite often decisions around creativity, well, they were made by people who weren't creative at all, you know? So I can't tell you how many times, previous years, you know, when I was, John Albany was my former sort of partner, musical partner in crime on my first six albums.
Sure.
And actually seven, he was on Emotional Rain as well. Yeah. So that'd be my first seven albums. Lovely guy. We're still friends, but you know, we would go into our sort of writing period for an album, and we'd write a bunch of songs that we accumulated these ideas on the road, and we'd, you know, we'd write a few songs and we'd take them into the record label, and they'd go, yeah, you know, so, cause we had to have monthly meetings with these guys and show them what we were producing, demo wise toward the next record, because we were on a publishing salary at that time.
Right.
So we'd go into the label and we'd play them, like we'd have written four or five tunes and gone, and demoed them, and we're like really excited about them. They go, yeah, those are okay, but listen to this song. And they play us like the new hit Night Ranger song or the new hit Bon Jovi song or the new, and they go, yeah, but this is what's on the radio. Can you write more songs like this? And we go, okay. And we go back to the table, and then literally that's how it would go for the next few months. We take in songs where we were trying to write a hit, and it would just be shite.
You know, right.
It would just feel so forced. And then by, you know, a few months into that, we'd get fed up. We go, you know, all this effort to try to write a song like that song or write, it just totally lacked authenticity. And then we'd get to the end of our, you know, writing period, and we'd go, ah, screw it. And we'd just go and write a few more songs, which were exactly what we wanted to do. And oddly enough, almost every record we ever made was that initial group of songs and the last group of songs,
right,
because they ended up being the best, most authentically earned material, you know, or is spattered in there with the odd cover tune where the record label was also the publisher on, you know,
right.
And,
of course.
So, you know, nowadays I just decide exactly what I want to do. You know, I decide what songs go on the record. That's why I formed for the last, well, since 1993, I've had my own boutique label. I had Hip Chick Music, Spastic Classic. Now I have Big Sister Records, which has been my own imprint. And I make all of the creative decisions myself. I decide what material goes on the album, who's producing. Right. I'm producing, actually, or who's where, which studio will go in, which engineer we use. So all of the creative elements are done by me and the band, as my creative, you know, musical team. And then we hand it off to the label, to the distributor. Sorry, I'm the label.
Right.
So I have a wonderful deal with out of Metalville in Germany. I love those guys. They're great. And they distribute me everywhere in the world except Canada. And Canada, I have a different physical distributor here. And I love it. You know, right. I feel as though I've gotten a lot more positive feedback on the last few albums I've done because I'm doing them exactly the way I want. And I'm not trying to make anybody happy except myself. I think, you know, when you start trying to write for radio or write for Spotify or write for a particular, you know, demographic of fans, you're not making your best work, right?
Right. No, absolutely true. Well, Lee, I'll tell you what, I know we got to cut this one short, but before we cut it off, I want you to tell people, where should we send them to keep up with you and buy, and I do say buy, not stream, buy actual product, whether it's music or merch or what have you. Where should we tell them to go?
So, really, honestly, the best place, Lee, if you go to leearon.com, that you can connect to all my socials from there.
Okay.
But, you know, conversely, if that's not your thing, a lot of people don't go to websites anymore. They simply go to your socials. It's leearon.music on Instagram, and it's leearonmusic on Facebook. And in the body of my bio, there's a link tree, and there's links to buy it all over the world. So...
Very yeah. good. Well, one more time for everybody. It is the new album. Here's the cover. So that's what you should be looking for. It is Tattoo Me from Lee Aaron out on April the 26th. And Lee, thanks as always for joining me here on Chris Aker Presents.
That is awesome. So great to talk to you, Chris.
Yeah, he can see through you. It all depends which rock you're looking under. Your fiction true.
What's going on, everybody? Chris Aiken here from every show you've ever watched in your entire life. And I'm here to talk about every book that you should be reading in your entire life, including this one, Call Me Chris. It is my second serious book that I ever did. It is about my burn accident and my time getting through that. It's a real page turner. It's not the happiest read in the world, I will tell you that. It definitely deals with a lot of the anger and fear and all the other shit that I was going through at the time, but it is a cool book. And if you like the survivor story type stuff, this is the book for you, because I definitely tell in detail what happened to me and how I got through it. So check it out. Call Me Chris, available now at chrisaiken.net or on Amazon. Just look up Call Me Chris and my last name, or else you'll find 15 other ones. But if you look up Call Me Chris and Chris Aiken, you will find it. All right. Call Me Chris. It's a great book. Get it today.